listening to Truth to You with Jono, and it is time for Cultured Pearls with the Cultured Karaites. G'day, Deb.
Good day, y'all. How are y'all doing?
Doing very, very well. Say g'day to Hani in the studio.
Shalom.
G'day, Hani.
Hello, Deb.
We're doing very well. I'm doing even better now that I savaged my face with a piece of dental floss because I had to get a piece of anchovy bone out from between my gum, which was there from last night's pizza, which was really, 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 really nice.
And what was the base?
The base was cauliflower. Now, I've already mentioned this, haven't I? We've talked about this because the recipe is in the book that we've spoken about on numerous occasions, Wheat Belly by Dr. Davis. Is
yes,
that right?
Yeah.
Excellent book, but one of those, I'm just going to mention it again because it is really, really good. An alternative to a gluten pizza base, a wheat base, is the cauliflower pizza base recipe. It's really, really good until you get an anchovy bone stuck in your gum between your teeth and it bothers you all night and you can't sleep and all through the day. But finally, I'm okay. It's all right. I'm okay now. How are you?
Oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness. I got to ask, I haven't had it in a very long time, but sometimes I think about it. There's a pizza crust here that they make that has garlic in it. And I just wonder, could you put a little garlic in the cauliflower crust?
Well, you know, Dev, I actually did think about it last night. I was thinking some herbs
and
some garlic. Yeah. I thought, I just actually fermented another batch of garlic yesterday, so I wasn't quite ready. But I thought definitely next time I will definitely put some garlic in there. I think that'll make a big...
Oh.
We have been eating... I'm all for the garlic. I'm back on the garlic, Deb, the fermented garlic, because we had Pesach, of course. We had some friends, quite a few friends come, and it was great. It was really good. But some of them had a cold and you know, share alike. And so the kids got a bit of a cold and a sniffle and everything. And so we've been hammering on the garlic. Also... Hani made, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but you know how I was really into the fermented chili, right?
Yes.
I love the fermented chili, all right? Just the mild, long chilies on my breakfast in the morning, you know, on the eggs and my rocket and it's all good. But she picked up some really, you know, the small, really, really hot chilies?
Yes.
Oh, man. So it's like fire. It's like lava in your mouth. It's incredible. And so I don't know. We don't know what to do. It's just sort of sitting there in the fridge.
I think it's probably going to explode. I don't know. I mean, I thought perhaps fermenting might settle them down a bit, but I think it's made it
Yeah,
worse.
I reckon it maybe it's made enhanced it. I don't know. It's incredible. But maybe I'm thinking about because now I just finished off a jar, Dev, just this morning I finished off a jar because we have been eating the garlic, the fermented garlic. And so now we have fermented garlic kvass, right? That's right, isn't it? I mean, the water that's
yes.
left over. Okay, so maybe
yes.
I can use that in conjunction with the chili kvass and make some kind of pepper spray.
I think that's probably what it would be good for.
And a really healthy fermented pepper spray.
Seriously, I opened the jar and I gave it a little bit of a stir with a plastic spoon. And it was literally just the tip of the spoon and I just sort of waved it around in there. And then I washed the spoon and then the spoon went into the dishwasher. And then I rinsed the spoon before I used it in my kefir. And I stirred the kefir with the spoon after it had been washed and forgotten, chili's all gone, forgotten all about it. Stirred the kefir with it and when I stir the kefir, I just lick the rest of the kefir off the spoon. That's just what I do.
Me too.
And I had chili on my lips.
Oh, no.
I'm not joking. And I was so concerned. I thought, if I ruined my kefir, like it's going to taste like chili. Thankfully,
That's
the
incredible.
Kefir is okay. But I couldn't believe it. That's after washing it and then putting it in the dishwasher and then rinsing it. And I could still feel the chili. I mean,
it's amazing. So maybe I'll tell you what we'll try. This was your idea last week, Dev, and I haven't tried this experiment yet. But maybe I'll get that, put it all together, and maybe put a few hard-boiled eggs in there, and I'll report back to you on that. I haven't done that experiment yet. You know what else?
Fire eggs.
It will be. It'll be fire garlic eggs, hard-boiled eggs. So I'll give that a go. No, actually, I'm curious. I think that'd be interesting. For the chickens to eat that. So,
yeah.
Another experiment, Dev, that I did try. Now, we did talk about deodorant, right? We were talking about household products and hygiene products and things like that. And we spoke about deodorant. Now, I've been using the same deodorant now for, oh, I don't know, 15 years or something.
Or like 20, I think.
Maybe 20. And there's nothing wrong with me. Yeah. And but you know, I thought I'd better try something a little bit more or a little less chemically, you know, things that I can pronounce maybe, you know. Mm. And you, Dev, you mentioned apple cider vinegar. Now, I haven't tried the apple cider vinegar yet because I thought, look, I'll just try one of these crystal thingies. What are they?
Yeah, they're body crystals.
Body crystals.
Yeah. The salt.
Salt.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so now I did that. But now, look, Ken Alder wrote a – g'day, Ken. He said, the apple cider vinegar underarm deodorant perspirant idea sounds good. He's going to give that a try. Drea left a recipe for homemade deodorant. That's in the comments as well. Thank you for that. And there's quite a few. And Heather comments also. Now, she uses the natural mineral salt stick for deodorant as well. And so I thought, okay, so this is a good thing, right? And a few people have commented. Now, Leah of Nourishing Treasures, that's an excellent website, by the way. That's a good website worth visiting. And you can find links there in the comments of the comments. And then James Robinson, g'day, James. James and I have met, actually. And he says he's been using cider vinegar for quite a while now. He reckons it's brilliant. He thinks it's absolutely tip-top. But Leah of Nourishing Treasures wrote that the crystal salts are actually aluminum, so you want to avoid those. Now, I think the crystal salt deodorant stick that I'm using is aluminum.
Is it?
I think so.
Oh,
wow. It doesn't say that on, I'm using the liquid form of it, actually. Or let me put it this way. I was using the liquid form of it, and I don't remember that being an ingredient. I'd actually have to go look. But I hope it's not, but I would really have to investigate that because I thought it was just a salt.
Well, that's what I thought as well. And when she wrote that, I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'll go and have a look at the ingredients, and that's what it says.
Doesn't ring a bell. I mean,
wow.
We actually pronounce it aluminium here.
Aluminium.
Aluminium. Or aluminum. It's probably, anyway.
I'm glad I stopped using it because we're both using now the apple cider vinegar, and it's working extremely well for us.
Okay.
And so
actually spray it on, or do you pat it on, or how do you apply it?
I do. I got an extra little spray bottle that I had from something, rinsed it out real good, and I put about a third apple cider vinegar and two-thirds water for the volume of the spray bottle, and we're spraying it.
Okay.
And it's actually working really well, and we took it a little bit step further in the last couple of weeks, and we are washing our hair with apple cider vinegar mixed with water. We don't just use it straight. We're mixing it with water, and we both do have short hair, so that's one thing. Zev got his hair cut recently, and it's working great.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, that brings me to Betz's comment. Betz, Hanok Ben Isaac's wife. G'day, Betz.
Hi, Betz.
And she says I've been using shampoo for a while, and she used apple cider vinegar and baking soda for shampoo, and she said she began smelling like the ACV. What's that?
Apple cider vinegar.
Oh, she began smelling like the apple cider vinegar. See, now I don't mind that smell. I quite like the smell of apple cider vinegar. But anyway, that's what she said. And so she tried a couple of different things. What did she try here? Oh, now she's saying.
Oh,
now,
yes.
You'd be excited about this, yes. Dev. She's saying, here's something I found on Amazon regarding kefir for shampoo. Quote, kefir contains bioculture to normalize the metabolism in the scalp, nourish and strengthen hair, and stimulate their growth. Shampoo containing the basic naturally yogurt helps to reduce fat content of hair, improves its structure, and fills nutrients, prevents breakage and hair loss.
Wow, I don't doubt it. So I believe milk kefir is a wonder thing. That's exciting. That's exciting.
There's another experiment.
Well, another thing I have to tell you, I've been using whey on my face as a toner.
Ooh.
And oh my goodness, you got to try it. I think I'm hooked.
Really?
Yes.
Right.
I like it. Oh, and makes your skin soft, and it's great. It's great. Wash your face, you know, however you normally wash it, and then just pat a little whey on there.
Uh-huh.
Lovely. That does sound really nice. Well, I've actually been using the baking soda without the apple cider vinegar on my hair for a while now, and I'm finding it absolutely fine. I actually really like it. I just like the fact that I'm not using the chemicals. I think that's more... I think I just really like that.
As Dev says, you know, if you can't pronounce it, you know, maybe you shouldn't be using it as a rule of thumb.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And so that's where we're going to. But I think the crystal salt thingy that I'm using is maybe not so good. If anyone has information regarding aluminum and why it is bad, please put it in the comments. That would be of interest. But I think I am going to switch to the apple cider vinegar. We've got some very good reports on that.
Yeah.
Now, Dev, last week, you and I haven't had a chance to look this up. I haven't had a chance to do the research on this, but you sent me into a spin when you, because here I am sitting here drinking a cup of dandelion tea, and you mentioned something about tea and fluoride. Are you able to elaborate on that?
I am. Now, you keep drinking that dandelion tea because that's really good stuff. But what I have found, and this actually came up for me with people talking about kombucha, because most kombucha uses tea, brewed tea, like black tea, green tea, red tea, as its base. And I wanted to, you know, find out about it, and I'm not even really sure now what brought me to the understanding that tea leaves in particular are very high in fluoride content. And we actually, you know, we don't use the toothpaste anymore. And do you know that there's in the United States, there's a warning label on toothpaste with fluoride in it?
Really? I didn't know that.
Since 1997, there's a warning label on toothpaste with fluoride in it. And so, you know, we try to avoid it. We got a water filter system that mm-hmm. has separate fluoride filters on it to filter our water. And so I found, and I love tea. I've always, you know, I'm from the South, and in the South we love our iced tea.
Nice.
And I thought, I can't face life without iced tea. Tea is very high in fluoride content. I came across a website, and then it's poisonfluoride.com. And the people, it's a Canadian website, and the people that have put this website together are parents of fluoride poisoned children. They evidently have a group that meets and things so that they get information out. And some of the things, you know, that they wrote in here were just heartbreaking, but some of it, you know, was really good information to understand about the high fluoride content of tea leaves. Mm. And this is not just in the United States. They've done research on the fluoride content of tea leaves, you know, from China all the way around the world. And tea leaves have a special ability or a certain ability that they absorb fluoride very readily and hold it. And so, you know, this is something I want to say again. I think everybody should research it out for themselves. Mm-hmm. I've done it for myself, and for our house no longer has tea here. We drink the dandelion tea, and we have some other herbal teas. And of course, you know, living in Israel for a year, our favorite thing is nana tea, which is fresh mint, and you pour boiling water over it.
Nice.
That is so delicious. Oh, mm-hmm. my goodness. That's kind of the national drink of Israel. And but this information that's on this poisonfluoride.com site talks about, let me read just a little bit here. Mm. Tea is very high in fluoride content. Fluoride in tea is much higher than the maximum contaminant level, which is, they use the letters MCL, set for fluoride in drinking water. Tea leaves accumulate more fluoride from pollution of soil and air than any other edible plant. Mm-hmm. Fluoride content in tea has risen dramatically over the last 20 years, as has tea consumption. There's a website by a pro-fluoridation infant medical group that lists a cup of black tea to contain 7.8 milligrams of fluoride, which is roughly the same amount as if one were to drink 7.8 liters of water in an area fluoridated at one part per million. It is well known that fluoride in tea gets absorbed by the body similarly as fluoride in drinking water. And I thought this was, kind of amazing. The fact that fluoride contains, I'm sorry, the fact that fluorides accumulate in the body is the reason why an MCL, which is maximum contaminant level mm-hmm. for fluoride content in water, needs to be set by the U.S. Environment Protection Agency by law under the U.S. Surgeon General. This is to be done specifically to avoid a condition known as crippling skeletal fluorosis.
That doesn't sound good.
No, it's not. The MCL is set so as to only avoid the third and crippling stage of the disease. So in other words, it should be a lot lower, but they've set it, only to avoid the worst part of it. It is set at 4 parts per million or 4 milligrams per liter, assuming that people will retain half of this amount and therefore be at a safe level. The EPA scientists, whose job and legal duty it is to set the MCL, declared that this level was set fraudulently by outside forces and that 90% of the data showing the mutagenic properties of fluoride were omitted. Now, first of all, I don't want any chemicals. If I can have control over, what I do, I don't want any chemicals. And it's a fact that fluoride exists in nature. But I don't believe, to the degree that now that fluoridation is across the world in fluoridation of water, that much can be good for me.
Okay, so just so I can understand, you're saying that this is due to modern farming practices with tea leaves and the production of tea leaves?
Well, the water, I don't know about the water.
So fluoridated,
but
fluoridated water, watering the tea,
crops.
The crops,
right?
And
plus,
they absorb it much, and also whatever's in the atmosphere
and what's in the soil,
yes.
And in the soil. So
and,
now, are we just talking about? Sorry, just to be clear, are we talking about your standard black tea? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, the ones that I have found listed are black tea, green tea, oolong tea, and red tea.
Okay,
even red tea.
Yes.
Wow.
Now that's like, is rooibos a red tea?
Because it's
I used to love it. It was my favorite.
Well, actually, we actually do drink it from time to time because it's caffeine free. I know you don't.
I don't because it smells like insecticide.
It does. Maybe
it is insecticide. Hey. There you go.
But it's caffeine free, so that's something that we have from time to time. But so that's on the list. Goodness.
How about that? So now, all right, now I have one other question. Deb, as far as you know, what's your understanding of some of the symptoms that people may experience from excessive fluoride in their system?
Well, I think one of the first visible signs, and this is, again, from just my limited research, is have you seen people with discoloration on their teeth, almost like freckles on their teeth, a mottled color? That's one of the, and I grew up with a lot of people here in the United States, a lot of kids that I knew that had that discoloration on their teeth. Their teeth actually looked like they had brown freckles on them.
Wow.
And I was always told that was from too much fluoride in the water when they first started. I'm from the generation of, I was born in 1950. So that they begin to do this about the, I'm going to say early to mid 50s, they begin to fluoridate the water. And there were areas where just too much got in, and kids came up with that. And again, evidently, it goes all the way from the teeth all the way to a crippling, horrible situation. And I can just imagine, too, if there are children or even adults that are more sensitive to it than others, that would be an even worse situation.
Sure.
But the thyroid is involved. I don't know. I don't understand. I'm not a doctor, or anything, but let me just read this one little paragraph. Drinking a cup of tea with fluoride content, as mentioned above, which would be 7.8 milligrams in a cup of tea, would mean a fluoride intake much higher than amounts which were actually given as medication to treat hyperthyroidism. For decades. Now, I think they've changed that, but for decades, they gave that amount lower than what you would get in a cup of tea now.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. If you don't have hyperthyroidism, it doesn't seem like to me you'd want to be taking, you know, that
amount. Yeah. That's just full on. Well, I mean, we Australians are big tea drinkers too.
That's right. Yeah, we are.
We're, you know, we have a cup of tea. That's
certainly,
what we do.
Well, it's not uncommon, so it's certainly something to look into. And
so what do you think are some alternatives, Deb?
Well, I've got some more horrifying, even worse horrifying to go along with this, but I do think herbal teas, and of course, you know, the kefirs, the milk kefir, the water kefir. Mm-hmm. I found a way to make the water kefir with, not make it with less sugar, but cause it to have less sugar in the end. So that's a good alternative. But there's actually worse news about the fluoride connection in tea, because let me just read again here quickly. To make matters much worse for human health, fluorides in teas are found together with aluminium.
Okay.
Aluminum. Yeah. The combination of aluminum and fluorides in teas is of urgent concern due to the increased damage done by fluorides when the presence of aluminum, especially neurological and renal damage. That the aluminum is present is indeed reabsorbed in the simultaneous presence of fluoride is shown in a study by Drs. Klaus Koch and colleagues at the University of Cape Town. They examined the urinary excretion of aluminum, which is an indicator of its resorption, in healthy male volunteers after drinking equal volumes of tea, coffee, or tap water on separate days. In every case, the amount of aluminum excreted over the 12-hour period increased on the day when tea was taken. Mm-hmm. Their results indicate that tea consumption must be considered in any assessment of the total dietary intake of aluminum in human beings. The fluoride-aluminum association is of particular importance as it relates to Alzheimer's disease. By itself is not readily absorbed by the body, but the presence of fluoride ions combine with the aluminum to form aluminum fluoride, which is absorbed by the body. In the body, the aluminum eventually combines with oxygen to form aluminum oxide or aluminia. Aluminia is the compound of aluminum that is found in the brains of Alzheimer's disease patients.
And hasn't Alzheimer's increased exponentially?
Yeah, it has. It really, really has. It's
It's amazing. But I found, and I, Jono, I don't know if you know this, but I'm fixing to excite you with this. If you don't know this, I know how you love Wikipedia. Oh my goodness!
Shush! Not supposed to tell anyone.
There is actually a Toxopedia.
A Toxopedia.
Oh, you're kidding. Is there really?
There is a Toxopedia.
It's your day gone now.
Yeah. Really?
Now you'll know what he'll be doing. Yeah. So I went to Toxopedia, and it basically said, you know, the same thing. It's a shorter article, but it actually included instant tea mixes, which kind of, you know, floored me after, because I'm thinking, you know, actual tea leaves. But they even included some instant tea mixes a woman developed the bone fluorosis, which is, you know, can become crippling. Mm-hmm. And so they mentioned that, but they basically say, you know, the same thing, the high fluoride content of tea, and that it's actually grown because fluoride is in much, you know, bigger use in the world today. And then to top it all off, not that I listen to everything he says, because I honestly don't always agree with him, but Dr. McCullough weighed in on tea, and he said fluoride is a toxic substance that can have profoundly negative effects on your body. If you consume green tea for health benefits, you might want to invest time in researching a brand that indeed is quite low in fluoride. Yeah. And he said, we aren't just whistling Dixie here, folks. Mm-hmm. This is a real threat, and you simply need to avoid brands that can dump loads of this toxic heavy metal into your skeleton. This study has made it quite clear that tea can be a source of fluoride. In fact, studies have shown and experts have come forth to testify that the risk of consuming fluoride far outweighs any possible benefit. So they're not saying that green tea doesn't have these wonderful polyphenols. It does. But you're getting such a dose of fluoride with it that it becomes not worth it.
Right. So what about organic teas and things like that? Would that make a difference?
No, because, you know, the water...
The water doesn't have to be organic.
Yeah, that's right. Well, how about that? So now, if I remember correctly, Deb, did you say, I mean, we're now talking about heavy metals, and you said last week that kvass, do I remember you were saying that helps to cleanse the body of heavy metals?
All fermented foods.
All fermented foods helps to do that. Excellent.
It is a chelator. It's slow, but it's non-chemical chelation. All your fermented food and drink. Yes.
Excellent.
Awesome stuff.
Excellent. Okay. So all right. So a little bit more research I have to do on this, but I'm shocked, Deb. Obviously, I had no idea about fluoride and tea, and I do enjoy a cup of tea from time to time, and
that connection with aluminium is
And so there it is, aluminium and fluoride. Would be very interested in the listeners' comments in that regard. Now, what else are we going to talk about, Deb? What else do you have in mind?
Well, one of the things I've got several, and it's kind of funny. I've gotten several emails this week, and it's funny that they like all came this week, and they're like, Deb, help me, my milk kefir is the kefir grains are they're like a mutant animal. And it, you know, is this normal? And I have to laugh because yes, your milk kefir grains, you know, I want everybody to really understand they are a live organism. They are a growing, live, changing organism. And the sweet little bitty grains that you get in the beginning are going to turn into this long ribbon of knobby looking stuff. but that means they're very healthy. They're growing and I do encourage people to, you know, to share them, you know, and I'm to the point now where I have to pull this long, you know, knobby ribbon thing out and cut it with scissors, kitchen scissors. So if your milk is really good, your kefir grains are going to be great and they're going to grow and you need to share it. And we get too many, we put them in a smoothie. But yes, they're going to change. They're not going to look like these sweet little cauliflower individual, you know, things. They can become some kind of monster looking thing.
They turn from kittens into cats, right? I mean,
they do.
An organism, they're very individual.
That's right.
As well, so my kefir might not look like your kefir. It's just
exactly.
They're all different, but yeah. they're like a pest on your kitchen bench. Dev, do you have a name for yours?
I don't, but I've really thought about it because we're just. But I'm always sending it out, so it's like, you know, I'm always sending out the babies all the time.
So give it a name, people. Put it on the kitchen bench and put a name on the jar. It's your pet. It grows. It's alive. Don't forget that it's alive.
But you eat your pet, so
well, you know, let's not get too far into the analogy, but it's alive. And not only is it alive, but you're heading into summer, right? And what happens to it during summer?
Oh, you'll make milk kefir. You'll make it in half the time that you were making
quarter
in the winter
for me,
time.
Right, over summer. Yep. It'll be coming out of your ears, people.
It overtakes the kitchen like the Blob. Have you seen that movie?
That's exactly what I'm thinking of. Yeah. It's a good thing that we consume so much, but even as much as we consume, I find now that of course, I live in Texas and it's a lot warmer here, you know, now already, that about every 2 weeks or so, I have to take a day break and, you know, put it in the refrigerator because I get too much.
Actually, what I was doing over the summer here, because we're, you know, opposite sides of the world, but I was putting it in the fridge overnight. So I was changing it in the afternoon and putting it in the fridge when I went to bed and letting it rest overnight and then bringing it out in the morning and letting it sit there for probably 4 or 5 hours and then changing it again. And that seemed to work when it was really, really hot. I also know there's some people up north here where it's really, really hot, right at the top of Australia. And she tells me that she actually packs it in an esky with ice packs. weeks.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my. Wow. Wow.
Because it's hot and it's humid and it's just, there's no end to it. And so you've got to keep it under control by putting it in hibernation, right?
Yeah. Well, semi-hibernation, just trying to keep the temperature a little bit more friendly for that. But there's a variety of different things you can do. But then, of course, you've got your really cold climates where it just, you know, it might take 3 days for your kefir to mature.
That's right. That's right. It can be, you know, kind of crazy because it is really dependent on your room temperature. Mm. And, you know, I've been trying to go at a 24-hour period, but I'm finding now that that's just not going to work for me anymore. It's making in like 12 to 18 hours now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm going to have to do some rearranging of my schedule, my kefir schedule. But, you know, when I think about it, and I praise Jehovah for it, it never escapes me that when he created all of the vegetables and then, you know, and all the vegetation, but, you know, all the good things for us to eat, he created the lactobacilli that are available on everything on this planet. Mm. And then after he got done with all that, he created man, and he's like, okay, you know, I have all these wonderful things for you. And when I'm flipping my kefir, it just strikes me and sometimes brings tears to my eyes that I have this amazing super is not even a good word. I want to say like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, you know, amazing drink that brings amazing health to me. Yeah. And it's so simple and it's so inexpensive and it's so easy to do. And I don't find it a chore to flip my kefir every day. I don't find it annoying or, oh my gosh, I got to do that again. And, you know, I don't look at it that way. It's an amazing gift from Jehovah, and it has brought amazing health to me.
Amen.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. Now I feel the same way too. I don't see it as a problem at all. It's just part of my daily routine.
It's a grand
thing.
Hey, now, I'm sorry to interrupt this, but I just had an idea while you were talking. My chili kvass. sorry, it's hard to get out of my mind because. Now, do you reckon it would be a substitute for Tabasco sauce?
Oh, I bet it could be.
All right, there's another experiment.
Oh, there you go. See, and it's interesting, too, because what I don't know if people really understand what we're talking about here, but we're actually, and this is amazing when you think about this, we're actually talking of recycling a ferment that we've already done and using it, you know, for something else.
Mm.
Can you imagine? It's not like starting all over to do something. We're actually recycling our ferments for other good, keep the good purpose moving on.
Mm.
That's right. Mm.
Isn't that something?
Amen.
It is.
Amen. Now, speaking of kvass, you have, Chani has done the experiment of the beet kvass.
Yes.
It's sitting there in the fridge now, I think. No, is it in the fridge or
it's
still
on
the bench?
No, it's in the fridge now.
It's in the fridge now. I haven't tried it. Have you tried it?
I haven't tasted it yet.
It looks really, really potent. So stay tuned. Stay tuned because we'll report on that one next week.
What do you suggest, Dev? I know that Sally Fallon thinks you should have a glass in the morning and a glass in the evening.
Yes, but start with 2 ounces. We're up to 4 ounces.
Okay.
4 ounces in the morning and 4 ounces in the evening. But I would suggest starting with two because I know that that Zev had a reaction from it. He was drinking it quite a bit over Pesach. We were away for at my sister's, and boy, he loved it, and so he was really drinking it, and he kind of had a reaction. So with any kind of fermentation, I think you should, if you're not used to it, I think you should start slow.
Very slow.
And,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the beet kvass in particular is extremely cleansing of the body. So, and anytime the body gets healthy, it wants to push the toxins out. So if you've got any at all and you start getting, you know, better and better and better, your body's going to push toxins out and it's not going to be pleasant for you.
That's right. Now, we might wait until we've
Anyway, it's been completed. It's in the fridge. It's waiting for us to sample, and we'll report on that one next week.
But I just wanted to ask you on that. How long do ferments generally last in the fridge?
You know, I know for sure they probably will last 6 months.
Six months,
I've never...
Right.
I wow. But from what I understand, they'll last much longer than that. You know, but I honestly have never had anything I've kept that long. You know, we use it up, but people ask me that all the time, and I think a good rule of thumb is 6 months. But I feel like that you'll get in there in 6 months, and you'll see that the ferment is perfectly good,
right?
Especially under refrigeration.
Well, it just didn't come with a use by date, so I'm not sure what to do.
Good, fair enough.
Now, also one other thing: what are we to expect when we drink this? Is this going to be a salty,
or does
vinegary?
The beet make it, sweet? Or,
well, you know, see, my taste has changed, so to me it's a little sweet, little kind of sour sweet, a little on the sweet side for me. But I know people starting out will just think it's sour. You know, their taste buds maybe haven't changed. And also, I don't use, I think Sally Fallon calls for a tablespoon of salt. Mm-hmm. And I, you know me, I'm a two to three teaspoon girl.
Yep.
So I don't use very much salt at all. So it's not salty.
Okay.
And you can, after you ferment it, you've got it in the fridge, if you want to add a little juice of some kind, feel free. You can just, you know, spice that up with whatever.
Some carrot juice or something like that.
Or cherry juice, grape juice.
Cherry juice,
Okay. All right, all right. Well,
we'll see how
I'm gonna kick off with the shot glass, I think. But anyhow, we'll get back to that. Is there anything else that we want to address today, Deb?
Oh, just I hope everybody's, making milk kefir, and I hope they're fermenting, and I hope they're getting healthy. And again, we just love to hear from everybody out there, and especially I love to hear the health benefits that are happening. I think those are amazing when people write to me and say, you know, I've been able to come off this medication, or my skin is cleared up, or this has happened, that's happened. And it happens, you know, at least once a week we get something. But I would love to hear, you know, more and more
Indeed.
Of the health improvement.
And thank you to haven't we got great listeners? Thank you to the listeners take time to comment and take time to ask questions and take time to share positive testimonies and things like that. We really do appreciate that. And you can certainly leave your comments at truth2u.org, truth2u.org. We have been speaking to Deb, the Cultured Karaite. The website is culturedkaraite@blogspot.com, culturedkaraite@blogspot.com. You can also find her on Facebook. Go there, like the page, The Cultured Karaite, and there is a plethora of information there. Thank you, Khani, as well. And we will speak to you again next week, Deb. And until then, dear listeners, be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's Word. Shalom.